This is the Stamfords podcast at the Stamfords Travel Writers Festival at Destinations in Olympia.
Please welcome for our 1 o'clock event, Lizzie Carr and Phoebe Smith.
Perfect. Well, hello everyone. Thank you for coming today and for coming to listen to this talk. I'm thrilled to be joined by Lizzie Carr, who I've actually known, God, it must be three years, four years, I don't know. It's all flown by, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And especially because, of course, some of you have had to battle some snowy conditions to come. So we've obviously got some adventurous types here with us today. So it has to be said, Lizzie, obviously, you know, you've written your book about paddling Britain. You're known for stand-up paddleboarding, navigating these rivers. On a day like today, some people might be thinking, well, when I read about this in the summer, it sounded good. Perhaps not now. So what convinced you to get into it? How did you find your way in?
Mine was really to recover from an illness. It was a low impact way of getting fit again. I was lucky. The first place I ever paddled was in the Isles of Scilly.
Nice.
It's beautiful. I don't know if anyone's ever been there before, but it's just stunning. So I was down there and saw somebody paddleboarding sort of out in the distance, and I thought, I must try that. I need to give that a go.
Yeah.
That was it. I was hooked.
Yeah. And did you straight away start paddleboarding from that moment on? Did you make it part of your kind of routine? Could you fit it into? Were you working full time still at that
time?
Yeah,
I was still working at the time, and I came back to London, and I actually didn't realise back then that I could paddleboard on the canals and rivers in London. And I sort of came back and I was sort of googling where I could go and do it.
Yeah.
Found out and started obviously exploring the waterways around London. Went to a club, borrowed a board, and yeah, the rest was history after that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And you mentioned before about illness and it was getting fit after that. Tell us a little bit about that. What happened and what then sort of made you find this?
Yeah, so in 2013, I was diagnosed with cancer. I'm fine now. And, so it was really after that that I couldn't do anything high impact. I was obviously quite ill. And I'd gone to stay with my dad in the Scillies, really, just after I'd had radiotherapy, just to get better and recover in sort of peaceful surroundings.
Sure.
And it was paddleboarding, really, when I started that just, it changed everything for me, because it was like meditation. It was physically improving my health and I was getting stronger from it, but it was also really sort of calming and relaxing, and I didn't expect to feel like that from it.
Yeah.
And I think really the combination of those two things is what really made me sort of fall in love with it.
And so is the Scilly Islands a place... This keeps going in and out. No, we're good. Is the Scilly Isles a place where you go back to because it's kind of the place where it all started, or have you since found a kind of favourite waterway in Britain?
I go back because I visit my dad.
Okay, yeah, it would be wrong not to.
I have to do that. So it's kind of killing two birds with one stone, because I do get to explore it every time I go, and I take the paddleboard, and there's loads of small islands around there, and you can sort of island hop between them. So it's really, it's a great place to do it. I do have other favourites around the UK.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately the Scillies, it's got a special place in my heart.
It's your sort of origin story,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And then obviously, I mean, it's quite apt that here in front of us are two bottles, reusable water bottles for us. And of course, we heard Roddy, when he was doing the introduction, mention about your plastic patrol. So what got you interested or to care, which so many of us are starting to wake up to, about single-use plastics?
Yeah, to be honest, it was when I came back to London and I started paddleboarding on the canals. And at the time, probably like most people, I was sort of in this environmental sleepwalk and sort of really disconnected with the problem. And this is going back, what, 3-4 years now? It was a long time ago. And I remember just feeling horrified by all this rubbish that I was seeing in the waterways. I mean, to the point where I was getting like bottles would sort of roll under my board and pop out the other end, and I get plastic bags caught in my fin. And
wow,
that was kind of an inconvenience and an eyesore for me. But then I remember one time there was a real sort of turning point in my head, and I saw a bird's nest. It was a coot's nest, and it had sort of little eggs in it. And it was made up almost entirely of plastic.
Wow.
And then you start really seeing the impact it's having on sort of the natural world around you. And that was really the moment for me. I thought, I've got to do something.
Yeah. And so how did you start that?
It really was just a bit of a one-woman crusade. I basically decided about 4 or 5 months after I quit my job that I was going to paddleboard the length of England and photograph every single piece of plastic that I saw on the route. And I think my thinking behind that was at the time that there was not... that, I mean, there's amazing media attention on this problem now, and it's great. It needed to be sort of spotlighted like this. But back then, it was very much... The little attention there was yeah. focused very much on the oceans,
right.
sort of where it all ends up and where so much it sinks. You know, 95% of plastic in the ocean sinks. It's you know, gone.
Yeah.
For me, it was about bringing it back to land yeah. and where it all starts, and trying to connect people in their own sort of towns and villages with the issue, really.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, if I paddle the length of the country through all these towns and villages and photograph everything I see on the way and plot it in this interactive map, then I'm kind of taking the problem to everybody. I'm sort of showing people firsthand what I'm seeing.
And if it's
in
their backyard,
journey.
I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and like localising it.
And were there any particular areas you remember being really bad?
Yeah, but I hate to name and shame, but yeah, there was, you could clearly see 4 or 5 sort of hotspots. We call them grot spots.
Okay.
Grot spot areas. And actually, when I was paddling, if I'd have picked all the rubbish up, I would have sunk the board, to be honest. So I just photographed it and then went back to those hotspot areas afterwards.
Yeah.
And did a clean up
yeah.
in those places.
And did you invite other people to join you on
Yeah,
those?
I did actually. Once I'd finished that first challenge, that sort of that 400 miles through England, actually, it got a lot of media attention, and the sort of interest in it snowballed. And for me, that was brilliant, because that journey was, you know, it was definitely the greatest adventure of my life, but it was really a vehicle to be able to talk about this problem.
Yeah.
So it was just incredible, because the response was huge, and people from all over the world were sort of getting in touch saying, how can I help? How can I get involved? What can I do?
Incredible.
And that's really where Plastic Patrol, the not-profit I set up, started.
Yeah.
So I really, I borrowed... a load of paddle boards, and I borrowed my boyfriend's van.
Handy.
Yeah, it was quite handy. And just travelled around the country and put out on social media, you know, I'm going to be in these different cities on these different canals, and if anyone wants to come and litter pick with me, you know, I'll teach you to paddleboard, all completely free.
Yeah.
Come and pick up all the rubbish and log it, and, you know, let's see what we can do.
Yeah.
And the response was huge. You know, I just kind of expected a few people to turn up here and there. But, I mean, it's free paddleboarding for a start. I'm sure that's a draw for some people. But people were really connected to the problem. And I think for me and my own journey was very much... I saw it firsthand, and that changed completely my thinking around it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sparked this kind of whole journey that I've gone on since. So my thinking has always been, if I can just get people to come and see it and sort of understand what it's like out on the water, lure them in with the thrill of a paddleboard, then, you know, that can only be a good thing.
And I think that's a really good thing, is an adventure that then has a deeper meaning to it, because it's rewarding for the people who come and learn to paddleboard, but also they can say, look, we pulled all this out.
Yeah.
So when you set off on that journey, did you know there was this problem, or was it quite an eye-opening,
on the
shocking,
400 miles?
On the 400 miles.
Yeah, the purpose of it was knowing from the canals in London how bad it was. What I didn't know was that you could actually paddle from Godalming in Surrey to Kendal in the Lake District without having to actually, apart from when you portage, like go around the locks, there's actually connected waterways through rivers and canals that entire way. That was new to me when I was researching it, to make that full journey.
And they say, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I bought a really old canal boat many years ago and did it all up, and it really opened a whole new world for me, the waterways, that you see places differently.
Yeah.
I mean, did you find a similar thing? Were you sort of almost shocked by, like, how peaceful some places were, maybe in the cities because they've got a canal?
It's definitely like an underworld, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really hard to explain unless you've experienced it.
Unless you go on it.
Yeah.
And how long did that 400-mile journey take you?
It was 22 days in total.
Yeah.
And I wild camped every night.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yay!
Used Phoebe's book to make sure I did it properly. But basically just took my tent on my board and my sort of stove and stuff, and just... You know, I think my family thought I'd sort of lost the plot, because I'd obviously had this really serious illness. I'd quit my job, and then I was like, I'm going to go and fight plastic. And they're like, Okay.
Yeah, any one of those things is enough for some people, but you tried to do them all in one thing. And did you have people joining you along the way, or did you do it all sort of as a solo thing?
No, I did it as a solo journey, but people, when they sort of learnt about it en route, would come out and sort of join me and walk along the towpath with me, or if they had their own paddleboards or canoes, they'd come and sort of canoe and kayak and paddleboard with me for certain routes, yeah.
And so when you set off on the 400 miles, how much experience had you of stand-up paddleboarding?
Not enough.
Really?
I sort of trained on the journey. I think I went in really naive to how hard it would be, but in some ways that was like the greatest part about it, because if I'd have overthought it, like with anything, I probably wouldn't have done it. It was hard, but the great thing about paddleboarding is it is so low impact.
Okay.
So I was just getting fitter as I was doing it. I was training whilst I was paddling, and every day it would get a little bit easier. My board would get a bit lighter because I'd eat more of my food. And actually, I used one of these bottles to drink the canal water with the filter in it.
They're such a great weight saver, aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, what would I have done without them? So, it was brilliant.
And you're proof that it worked. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
But then, so you were doing that. You were taking your pictures. You were logging that with Plastic Patrol. And is that still going? Is that something that people can still get involved in?
Plastic Patrol in the last 3 years has just grown and grown and grown. So last year, we had about just over 1,000 people come out on the waterways across the UK. We've collected about 190-ton bags of plastic from the waterways.
Wow.
Yeah,
what
really.
What do you do with all that plastic?
It's a good question. At the moment, we give it to the Canal and River Trust, and I'm assured it goes into recycling. But this year, we've actually started looking at different ways and different things we can do with that plastic. Like, for me, I'd love to turn them back into paddle boards.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Are there currently any recycled stand-up paddle boards?
Like, no, there's kayaks, but there's no paddle boards.
There's no paddle. So that could be the next.
Yeah.
That could be the next big thing. And when you've taken people out to experience that, have you sort of, how's it felt watching the look on their face when they realise about the plastic problem? Does a lot of people surprised, or are they kind of like, kind of knew it was here?
Yeah, there's probably a bit of a split with the people that come out and do Plastic Patrol. So you've got half that are really sort of aware and interested in the environmental side of it, and they're coming because they're committed to doing their bit.
Yeah.
And then you get sort of the other camp that, you know, want an adventure.
Yeah.
And they'll litter pick to get a free paddleboarding session. But it's funny because obviously the ones that are coming for the adventure side of stuff, you really do start to see their reactions and the messages I get from people afterwards. I mean, the number of people that have gone and bought their own paddleboards, go out and do their own litter picks on their own now, and just kind of, it's a ripple effect, isn't it? If all of them are just kind of doing their bit outside of it and I'm doing mine, then, you know, that it can only grow and grow. And that's how you see what's happened now with the amazing changes that we've kind of noticed over the last couple of years with people's awareness around the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. People are more ashamed now, I think, if they suddenly have this bottle and think, I probably should have brought my reusable with me or what have you.
There's definitely more of a stigma attached to it now,
I think. There is. And so how do you, say if any of us here now suddenly said, you know what, you've sold it to me, despite the cold weather, I want to have a go paddleboarding. What's the first step?
I would probably say, first of all, go to a local club. There's so many now over the country.
Yeah.
And just learn the basics. A lot of people will go straight in to buy a board. And you can buy really sort of good beginner boards.
How much for are we talking for?
They can start at about £250.
Oh, okay.
And anything up to about £2,000 or £3,000.
Wow, yeah.
So, the price range really varies.
Yeah.
But I think just to kind of learn the basics of paddling and understand the waterways, even the canals, like, they're really safe. And obviously, they're not particularly deep. So if you fall in, you can probably stand up.
Yeah.
Which is funny because people, if they do fall in, sort of, they really panic. It's like, just stand up,
it's fine. Put your feet down.
Yeah. They're like, all right, okay. But I think it just gives everyone a really good sort of grounding into the sport and understanding things like boat traffic and the importance of wind and all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, there's so many sort of boards out there, and it's such an accessible sport. You can literally, mine are all inflatable, actually.
Okay.
So I put them, they're all in backpacks, so I can travel all around the country
and
with
just
my backpack,
get it ready,
you know, and then pump it up when I'm on the water's edge and off I go. And it's just the freedom that brings. And you talk about cold weather, and obviously snow's a bit different, but autumn for me is just the best time to paddle because it's the time of year that no one's really out on the water because it is a bit windier and it is a bit colder.
Yeah.
But you get all the beautiful colours.
Yeah.
You get sort of this calm peacefulness and that sort of like frost in the air. And it's just, I think it's amazing.
It sounds wonderful.
As long as your feet are warm, you're fine.
And so how do you do that? How do you stay warm when you're out stood up on the water?
In the summer, it's fine. Obviously, the temperatures of the water are quite warm anyway. But in winter, you do need to be careful of that.
Do you wear a wetsuit always on your paddleboard?
And little sort of like neoprene booties.
Yeah.
They're really good. I think that's the key thing is your fingers and your toes. If you keep them warm.
Yeah.
You warm up as you paddle, but you do have to be careful of that, definitely.
And when you start off, you said, you probably were a bit naive, didn't realise how hard. I mean, how hard actually is it to paddle and steer one of this? Is it quite, does it come to you quite easily? Can anyone do it, basically?
Yeah, do you know what? Actually, a lot of the participants of Plastic Patrol, that one of mostly sort of like millennials, but there's this growing pocket of like women over 50s that are taking up. And I think this is an amazing story. I actually did my qualification with a 70-year-old lady who'd had a hip replacement.
Wow.
And she was paddleboarding to rehabilitate her hip. Yeah.
You should start doing sessions with people, like rehab sessions.
It is great rehab. Yeah. It's brilliant. That's exactly what it was for me and exactly what it was for her.
Yeah.
Another person that came on Plastic Patrol this year, he'd slipped a disc in his back. And he'd come more because he was focused on the environment. And so this is amazing. This has actually helped my recovery more than anything else.
Yeah.
He's bought a paddleboard and he's out on it all the time now. So there's this whole other side of it as well.
And it's called stand-up paddleboarding or SUP. But do you have to stand up on it? I've seen people kneeling on the board doing that. Can you do that?
When we clean up, we mostly kneel down because you've obviously got a paddle and a paddle and the litter pick.
Yeah.
And trying to stand up and do both, I mean, it's tricky for me.
Yeah.
So we go on our knees normally or sit on the boards when we sort of collect rubbish. If people want to stand, they can.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not compulsory.
You don't have to do
that.
And then so recently you've done another adventure. Yeah. Because the 400 miles, that's, and that was a world record, I think, right? And so you've just done another one in the US.
Yeah.
Tell us about that one. What did you do there?
I paddleboarded the River Hudson. Tidal River Hudson, so it's 170 miles, and I finished right in front of the Statue of Liberty.
Where does it start then? Where does the Hudson start?
It starts in Albany, so the Tidal Hudson starts in Albany.
Yeah.
It flows 170 miles down. That was a bit hairy.
And was that Plastic Patrol as well?
Yeah, I did clean-ups along the foreshore, so it was a way of taking Plastic Patrol out to the US.
To the US, yeah.
And I did a lot of citizen science on there, so I had a fin on my paddleboard that was microchipped.
Okay.
So it was measuring water temperatures periodically along the journey.
Okay.
So there's a lot of information about water temperatures in the ocean environments, but not necessarily in riverine environments.
Yeah.
So it's a good way to kind of get a baseline understanding of the Hudson in terms of water temperature.
Yeah.
Did some microplastic sampling on the water as well, which we're actually still waiting for the results.
I was going to say, do we have the results of that yet?
I should get them on Thursday, next Thursday.
Okay.
I've been chasing. And then, obviously, doing the community cleanups at different locations along the way.
And how did you find the US compared to the UK with that? Both in, I guess, first in actually the paddleboarding, was there any difference there? And then in the way people reacted to the plastics problem?
I think we are a lot further ahead in the UK in
really?
Terms of awareness and sort of like putting things in to make, put things in place to make changes. It's not great out there, to be honest.
No.
And it's quite frustrating.
Was there more plastic there than we've seen
in terms of on the water? I think tit for tat, like it wasn't a great deal in it, but in terms of the awareness and people's consumption and this kind of like mindless consumerism, I think we've come a lot further, a lot quicker.
Was there any different type of rubbish that, like, is there a distinctly British plastic thing that you see versus them, or is it more or less plastic bottles?
Do you know what it is? It's bottles, wrappers and bags are the main things that you see, and that's consistent in the UK and the US and also in rivers and canals. Like, it's always the same.
The main
single-use plastics, basically.
Yeah. And how long did that journey take you?
9 days.
And were you wild camping on the way for that?
No. I was going to, but the Americans are quite territorial about their land.
Yes. So they also were allowed guns, which doesn't help.
Exactly. And with that combination, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to play it safe. There was campsites along the way, so I could go to the campsites.
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah.
And what was the turnout like compared to here? Did you get many people coming down to help?
Yeah, the turnout of the cleanups was surprisingly good. I work with, there's a couple of charities along the Hudson, one called Riverkeeper and one called the Hudson River Park Trust.
Yeah.
And they sort of collaborated with me, and they've obviously got their audiences, so we sort of worked together, and that I think helped make the sort of a, get the awareness out there for it.
Yeah.
But I was pleasantly surprised by the turnout.
Oh, good. Yeah. And has that got you thinking about other rivers elsewhere in the world that you might want to go take this to?
I definitely still think we've got a lot to do in the UK, and yeah, that's my main focus. And obviously I'm in America now, and we've got a nice program that's developing out there. So I think for the time being, it's kind of sticking to these two territories.
Yeah.
But never say never.
Yeah. There's not a particular river that's like almost like an itch you need to scratch.
There's an ocean.
Oh, is there? Yeah, which ocean? Or is that top secret?
It's top secret.
Have you got another river adventure, even in the UK, say, coming up soon?
I'm actually going back to a couple of the routes in my book in the next few months, just because I like paddling them. So, they're the main ones. There's the Meanders and the Cuckmere, which I really love. And it's non-tidal. It's flat. It's beautiful.
And where's that one again, sorry?
In Cuckmere.
Right,
so,
okay.
Like down
on
the
nice.
South coast, yeah.
And how long, so the book then obviously is telling us a bit about how to do it, how to get into it, and then actually suggesting a whole bunch of routes. What sort of length are we talking? Is this specifically for people just new to it? I mean, or are we going to have multi-days and wild camps? And
there's a real mix, actually. There's a lot of really lovely beginner routes in there.
Yeah.
And I would say for any beginner, I mean, it's probably not the most like sexy of places, but the canals are great because they're really sheltered. They're not tidal.
Yeah.
So a lot of the issues you get on rivers and sort of ocean paddling, you don't have to deal with on canals.
Yeah.
So it's a great starting point. But then there's other sort of multi-day adventures in there, and sort of it gets a little bit more tricky with some of them. But it's all of the paddles are graded,
yeah.
But they're sort of graded under my system,
yes.
So like 1 to 5. But it's really tricky because when you're writing a book for paddling, canoeing, and kayaking, obviously things like distance,
yeah,
on a paddleboard compared to a canoe. It's you know, you can't really compare the two. It's completely different.
Which one's faster?
Canoe.
Canoe's a lot faster.
Yeah.
Okay, so paddleboard, it's like you said. I mean, they say the British waterways are the fastest way of slowing down, which I have found true no matter what you do on them. Even if you just go for a swim, you know, it's all about taking your time.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that's the joy of stand-up paddleboarding.
Yeah,
it's the slowness.
Those routes,
it's not got to get this like really fast workout in. It's...
That's the pleasure I take from it, always about taking my time. And
what would you say is a nice length of a paddle for someone just getting into it?
A nice length, but with a sort of a bit of a
challenge.
Bit of something. Yeah, probably about 5 or 6 miles.
Okay. Yeah. That's doable. And are the routes, have they got other kind of things to see on the way? Are we going to be seeing sort of ruins, wildlife? What might we see?
Yeah, exactly. So there's routes in there where we're sort of paddling past sort of historic places. So the Manchester Canal is a good example of that, actually.
Yeah.
We've got the old like derelict tunnels, canal tunnels, which is really interesting. You can't go into them, but you can go past them.
Yeah, have a little peer in.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. There's quite a lot of plastic around them as well. So that route particularly in Manchester is in there, and I sort of really sort of question whether or not to put it in.
Because it's not pretty.
It's not pretty at all.
No,
but it was part of the route on my 400 miles, and I just found that whole area really interesting. There's a lighthouse, the only lighthouse on any sort of waterway in the UK, canal.
Wow.
Is in that section of the Manchester Canal.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely routes in there that to sort of first look at, you're sort of like, why am I here? But when you sort of read a bit more about it, you can appreciate a lot.
And I guess a lot of them, because like you said, you know, I mean, the canals, you know, we inherited them from the Romans, you know, of moving things around. So they all do have real historical interest too.
I think our canals are amazing places.
Yeah.
Like, I just think we just need to breathe new life into them, and things like paddleboarding and canoeing and kayaking. Like, I just want to see more people using our waterways for pleasure, and then not sort of being stigmatised as this dumping ground for rubbish.
Yeah.
And that's what I've tried to do with it through paddleboarding, is just sort of show people that, okay, yeah, we have some not great areas, but we also have some really beautiful parts of the country, like Lancaster Canal, again, in the book. It's stunning.
Did that sort of surprise you?
It's really surprised me.
Yeah.
And there's a section of it that's kind of derelict because the M6 sort of chopped up the waterway. So no boats are on it. And you're paddling. It feels like you're in the an Amazonian jungle. So sort of like paddling through all this
with
kind
a machete.
Of overgrowth. Yeah, not that bad. You can paddle through it. But it's just incredible. And there's the one thing I would say to look out for on routes like that is swans, because they're really, really territorial.
They are. I have experienced that in the Thames. They can be quite nasty.
Quite scary.
Yeah, they're pretty big. And when they flap, when they come into land.
Oh, behind the board.
Oh, my goodness.
And
they
you
sound
hear
like
the
it's
sound.
A jet plane coming in.
It's really intimidating. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. And what's your absolute favourite? If someone said, gun to your head, you have to pick the best route in that book, what would be your favourite?
It's got to be the Scillies.
Yeah?
Yeah. The route from Briar to around Tresco is really beautiful. And definitely, I wouldn't say absolute beginner, but definitely if you've got the right conditions, not too much wind.
Yeah. Maybe calm. Hire a guide, because there are guides over there,
presumably.
Yeah, there's
lots
as well.
Of different clubs listed in there. I've listed them for the ones in Scillies as well, so you can rent boards if you can't take your own.
And then just so we represent the Britain properly, is there a Scottish one you would also recommend? We talked a lot about England, so
yeah, there's Loch Laggan.
Okay,
have you been there?
Yeah, with Laggan Locks.
Yeah,
obviously not down them in a paddleboard, but
it's really beautiful actually, and it's the largest freshwater beach.
Yeah.
So you go there and you can actually just sit and sunbathe on the beach if you wanted to. Yeah. Obviously, it's
paddle
nice to
a little
paddle.
Bit, yeah. And then just have a sunbathe on the beach.
Yeah, no, it's really beautiful. And Scotland's great for paddling and exploring. And I think as well, because you've got the rights to roam up there as well, you can have great adventures.
Yeah. Although I would say probably not June to August because of the midges. I don't know
Good
how you have found. But May and September for me, Scotland is the best time to go.
You've just got back from there, though,
I have
you?
Just got back. Yes, I've just been. Everyone told me there was a lot of snow to come back to. I was like, you haven't seen my pictures quite yet. They have real snow up there. So I suppose, really, we know how we can get into paddleboarding. Your book's full of all these routes. And have we mentioned Wales? Have we mentioned one in Wales?
Wales. Ooh,
would you give us a Wales one?
I like the Mumbles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I've not been in.
So you can go around the lighthouse on the Mumbles. So you just shoot out from the bay.
Yeah.
And then there's two sort of rocks protruding out, and the lighthouse is on the further one, but you can sort of paddle around it, and then you get a nice sort of view back onto the bay as well. And Conwy as well is really nice.
Conwy's
the castle.
Yeah, of course.
Gorgeous paddling down alongside there as well.
And how does it work with permissions? Do people need to get a license? Do you just rock up with your board and get on in?
A good question. So the right answer is you should, for the waterways there, you can get a license from Canal River Trust and British Canoeing, but you need to check what waterways they own, because there's quite a few private waterways. So Bridgewater Canal in Manchester is private, and I don't think you're allowed to paddle on that at all.
Yeah.
So you do need to check in advance.
Check
and others are other privately owned rivers as well, like the Beauly River.
Yeah.
That's in the book. You need to be careful of that. There's a £5 fee if you want to paddle on their river.
Got you.
So you do need to be aware.
Signpost that? Is there
Not really. You do need to research it.
Yeah. And you can buy maps as well. I have a waterway map. And you can get books of that. Obviously, you should buy Lizzie's completely. But but you can then get a map, because I'm a bit of a map geek. I know you're a bit the same way, to see sort of what's out there. And I bet people would be surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, do you do that? Do you get out a map and suddenly go, oh, I want to check this place out. What's this
like on
water? Do
you know, I just drive around, and if I see somewhere, when I was in Scotland, I saw Loch Sunart.
Yeah.
And I was just going past it on my way. I can't remember where I was going. And I was like, I have to stop. And I had my paddleboard.
Yeah.
And I just paddled on it. And I was like, this is incredible. This is just amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what can, I think I'm going to open it up for questions to the audience in a minute. But I think I'd like to ask, what could people do here at the show today to start helping with the plastic problem?
There's really simple things, I think, that we can all do, and I'm sure a lot of people already do it, but it's the obvious ones, like the reusable water bottles, stop using plastic bags, get canvas bags, coffee cups, bring your own coffee cups. They're just really simple things. These are the biggest plastic offenders. They're the worst kind of plastics, the single-use ones. And it's kind of inexcusable now. There's so many brands that are sort of selling these reusable cups and bags that we can all use. I think one thing I think we do have to be mindful of is substituting single-use plastic for single-use other materials.
Okay.
For example, straws, switching from a plastic straw to a paper straw.
Yeah.
for me, the single-use culture as a whole is a problem.
Yeah.
And it's all about trying to find sustainable alternatives that we... So a metal straw would be a great alternative. We can reuse and reuse. Use a straw if you don't need one.
If you don't need one,
Again, with the people often say, we should do what the Americans do in Whole Foods and use paper bags in our shops.
Yeah.
There's still energy consumption in that process that is for single use and then thrown away. Whereas if we all just bought our own canvas bags and used those multiple times, we wouldn't face that problem. So I think there's a real education process around plastic now and sort of demonising that as a material when actually we need to look at sort of the culture as a whole.
And I suppose if you happen to have already picked up a plastic bag here, just reuse it. Don't just get home and chuck it in the bin. Yeah. Like, keep hold of them, isn't it? Like, what you have, keep using.
Keep using, yeah.
And so I'll open it up for questions now, I think. Have I got Roddy somewhere? There he is. Sorry, you blended in so well. I've got a light in my ear. So does anyone have any questions that they want to ask Lizzie about paddleboarding, canals, waterways?
Hi, Lizzie. Just quickly, can you tell us about any really hairy moments that you had and how you might have gotten over those moments? It's really nice to hear about the positives and the great things, but sometimes I think we can get a lot of strength from hearing about someone's weaknesses or the moments of weakness.
There's definitely a lot of those. I think I paddled the English Channel in 2017.
Yeah.
And I've never been seasick before. And I didn't even know you could get seasick on a paddleboard, to be honest. And I remember I had a support boat, and I remember saying to everyone, like, take your seasickness tablets, you know, I don't want anyone to get ill. I was so ill. It was awful. So that's definitely something that...
What did you do? Because you can't really take them once you started.
No, I couldn't do anything about it. I remember thinking, like, physically I feel okay, mentally I feel okay, but my God, I just need to be sick.
Oh.
I wasn't, because I knew as soon as I started I wouldn't stop. I couldn't eat, and it was really hard because I needed to be strong.
Energy.
I needed the energy, but I just couldn't stomach anything.
Yeah.
Eventually it just started to subside, but that was really tricky.
Yeah.
And then the other one, I suppose, was on the Hudson. We had... Hurricane Florence was making its way into the East Coast, and Storm Gordon was making its way out. So it's just like the worst timing ever to do that challenge. And it was hard because I didn't have any support boat for that. I was aware, very aware of the conditions, and I was always keeping my eye on them. But where there would be a thunderstorm predicted at, say, 4 o'clock, I'd know I'd need to get off the water at, say, 3 to make sure I'm not on there stuck in a thunderstorm. But then the weather would just change so quickly, and I'd just be stuck on the water with this carbon paddle in my hand, like me alone, and just quite intimidated and scared by it. So there's definitely moments out there where it gets really uncomfortable, and it becomes much more of a mental battle to kind of just not panic and just find the quickest exit point off of there. I think that's why I said earlier on about actually going into a club and like learning properly how to paddleboard, because it's really easy now and it's so accessible just to buy one and get on the water. But if you don't know how to handle yourself in those environments, it can be really dangerous.
And I must ask with that then. I think one of the things I know from when I learnt to kayak was the fear of falling in. That put people off. Is that the same with stand-up paddleboard? Do you remember the first time you fell off your paddleboard, and did you panic, and how did you do?
I was really scared about falling off on the channel, because it was like thinking about what's underneath you and sort of the vastness of it. Mm. I didn't. But I guess on the Hudson Challenge, I did fall in once.
Yeah.
It was more shock, like the shock of the water.
Yeah.
To be honest, like, on challenges, I haven't fallen in a great deal.
Okay.
So I don't really know.
Are you glued to the board?
Yeah, I am in a way, I think.
What special magic feet?
I'm just really careful because I don't want to go in. So I do. So as soon as it starts to get windy, I'm on my knees. Like, I don't take stupid risks.
So that's what you can do. You can go.
Yeah, you can. The natural thing to do as soon as, you know, it starts to get a bit windy, just get down low, and then you'll be able to make up more distance.
Presumably part of going out with an instructor and doing training is that how to fall in properly.
I don't think there's, when you go in, you go in. I don't think there's a proper way of, there's no stylish way of falling.
I think you've got to be able to style it. I think you need to come up with, this is the Lizzie Carr way that you're going to fall in with style.
There's no stylish way of doing it.
I'm just
owning
it. Well, but once you've fallen in, how easy is it to get back on?
In a canal, really easy.
Yeah.
In a river that's not fast flowing, really easy. But then when you start, you know, if you're in big waves and fast flowing water, yeah, it starts to get more tricky. So it all depends on the environment that you're in. And, you know, you shouldn't be paddling in an environment that you're not comfortable getting back onto your board in the conditions that you're in.
And presumably being a confident swimmer, because it's, in the end of the day, it's wild water, would you say?
Yeah, do you know what? You've got a buoyancy aid on, and your paddle board is essentially your biggest buoyancy aid. Like, it's a huge inflatable thing that you are attached to. So I would recommend everyone always wearing a leash that you're attached to. So if you fall in, you'll float, and you're just going to go straight back to your board.
Yeah.
And climb back on again.
So you're always wearing a buoyancy aid.
Yeah, I've had people that can't swim come out on plastic patrol.
Okay.
They're obviously more nervous and they generally stay on their knees, but everyone's got buoyancy aids on.
Yeah,
and
so if they fall, you know they're just going to float there.
They're just
going
to get back onto their board. They're attached to their board, they'll be fine.
Yeah, okay.
And I think people need to fall in, actually.
I think once you fall in, you
fear goes.
Yeah,
because
you know what to expect.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, definitely. Anyone else have any questions as I suddenly rattle away with some more?
It's a bit of a personal question, but in October 2020, I'm going with a bunch of friends to the Scilly Isles.
Okay.
Sorry, asking the wrong person.
To the Scillies?
Yeah, okay. And it suddenly occurred to me it'd be really nice if we could hire a guide and go off on a little trip paddleboarding.
You should.
So, A, is it going to be warm enough end of October without hiring wetsuits? And also, can you recommend a guide who can take us for 2 or 3 hours?
Yeah, so if it's not warm enough, the guides will have their wetsuits and whatever that you can use. I think it's still a perfectly good time of year to do it if you are kitted up in the right way. And St Agnes Water Sports, the guys on that island, are really, really good. And there's I would speak to them, actually. There's another guy that rents boards out, but I don't think he does guided tours. So you should also go and see the seals, snorkel with the seals. That's really amazing. Yeah. On your paddleboard.
Any other questions? I wasn't sure whether I saw another hand. With that in mind, with this lady going on this trip, is there anything you've learned from doing it for the years you've been doing it now that's like your creature comfort thing that you think this has just made it a little bit more pleasant, or a treat that you have when you get out? Or is there something you do as a pick-me-up?
Not really. Honestly, it's about keeping my feet warm. As soon as my feet get cold, that's it. It's game over for me.
And so how do you do that? Is that just the neoprene boots?
Yeah, good thick neoprene boots, I think it's for me.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything like that. I have silly things. Like, I'll always take a carabiner with me. Like, that always comes in useful at some point on an adventure.
Yeah,
But no, not sort of like little... I should probably. It'd be nice to, wouldn't it?
You might have them and just never actually noticed that you have it.
Yeah, I'll think about that.
But I'm always a sucker for that. I'm a total reward person. So if I'm going to climb a mountain, there has to be a packet of jelly babies in there that I know I'm going to have. I'm like, you know, that's why the carrot works, not the stick. It's like, got to keep doing that in Scotland just now. You know, I was like, okay, when I get to that point, I'm allowed the Snickers. When I get to that point, I'm allowed one of these. And of course, so food is one of my things I love. I always say you can't have amazing adventures if you're hungry, because, I mean, I get very angry when I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You know, my doctor advised me to carry a cereal bar with me everywhere for an emergency. Phoebe, have some food. So what do you, what's your appetite like? What's your kind of comfort food when you're doing a bit of a mission on the board?
I'm a bit naughty on the board because I don't eat a great deal. So especially on like bigger challenges, I'm sort of so focused on paddling. And I think because I'm standing up and everything's just a bit awkward. I'm really naughty in terms of not drinking enough either, because it's such a dehydrating sport, and because it's low impact, you don't realize how much.
I suppose so.
I need to get better at that. But I take a lot of fruit out with me, to be honest. Like, that's what I do eat.
And a little bag for your rubbish and that sort of thing.
I take a dry bag.
Yeah.
And the fruit won't be packaged with anything, so that's why it's a bit easier. I take a dry bag and it all just goes in there, so just little snacks and really.
I think I would be eating a lot more. I think if I went out with you, I'd need a second paddleboard just for my snacks to keep me going to do that. And is there anything that you Like I always say, when I take someone new out into the mountains or to wild camp, I always give them the better kit and I always make sure they're warm and comfortable. Is that something you sort of do, bringing the newbies out? Are you sort of mindful that everyone has a good time and stays comfortable?
Yeah, definitely.
Or do you like them to have a bit of a challenge?
No, I want to give people as good an introduction to the sport as possible, because I think it can look quite intimidating sometimes, especially standing up in it. And as soon as people do it, and as soon as they're up, it's like this kind of moment that, like, actually, that's a lot easier than I thought it would be.
Okay. So they've built it up almost, yeah, that it might be a bit harder.
Yeah, it's definitely a mental battle with most people. And then as soon as they stand, it's like, okay, this actually isn't that bad.
Yeah.
So I just try and make it as nice for people as possible. Like, we use good, sturdy paddle boards. They're all beginner boards. They're really wide and they're quite sort of big. And our paddles, you can get really heavy paddles, but we've got really nice ones for the beginners as well. So they've got a great first
lighter weight paddle.
Easier to handle, easier to manoeuvre the board.
Because which part of you is aching when you're stand-up paddling? I imagine it's
all
your leg.
You.
Is it not?
To be honest, unless you're... Okay, for me, not much, but I think for the beginners, it's often they'll say their arms.
Because they're doing a motion they're probably not used to doing. But,
and also, I think... Until you actually fire from your hips when you paddleboard, it's all from your core.
Okay.
And you're sort of like, that's where most of your sort of thrust is coming
right,
from.
Right, okay.
But I think naturally people use their arms. They're really just your anchors.
Right.
They're not really where the power's meant to be coming from. That's just not sustainable. They're really small muscles.
And it's the same with kayaking. You know, it's like you're using your whole body. You're not, like you said, your arms are just... placing them where to go,
exactly.
You know, and that you can get tired.
Learning that movement. So people get tired, I think, and they get ache just because their technique hasn't refined yet, but that just takes practice.
And is there somewhere people can look out to come out on Plastic Patrol with you? Whereabouts are you telling people about that?
So there's a website, plasticpatrol.co.uk. We've got a couple of listings up for March. There's one in London and one in Oxford. And then from about May onwards, when the weather warms up, because I want people to have a nice experience, so we go out in the summer.
Yeah, not everyone's a sadist like me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's a bit of ice, let's paddle.
Most people are. As soon as they see a little bit of rain, it's like, cancelled. I care, but not that much.
Yeah.
So we do it over the summer months, from May to about September, and we go all around the country, sort of Coventry, Birmingham, Nottingham, Sheffield, Blackburn. I haven't done Scotland. It's always been England. So this year we're trying to do a few routes in Scotland as well.
Yeah.
So,
and do you provide all the kit for everyone?
All the kit's provided. Leashes, buoyancy aids, paddles, buckets, litter picks. You just need to turn up and litter pick.
Wow. Okay. Yes. So they just need to come on one of yours, paddleboard with you, grab your book so they've got all the routes at their disposal. So then go off and do them. And they're routes that are suitable as well for any water, like for kayaking, I think, and for paddleboarding.
Yeah, it's all suitable for everyone,
To be able to try that. And so if you had to, I suppose we should be wrapping up in the next couple of minutes. If you had to, are there any questions before I just hog the last one? Any final questions? Have you got one?
I ask one.
Yeah, of course.
I've managed to ruin the propeller on a canal boat by going over a washing machine in the canal in Birmingham. Have you seen anything? You mentioned feeling comfortable on inland waterways, but not on the channel. Even inland, have you seen anything that scared you, be it under the water or indeed animal or human above water?
Not scared me, but horrified me. A lot of washing machines, a lot of car bonnets, scooters.
Trolleys,
umbrellas, like you name it, I've probably seen it. And often, this is awful, but you see like a lot of just single shoes. And you pick them up and you're thinking, I hope there's nothing attached to this. Like, some places are that bad, but you're
just
dreading. Yeah, but so far, nothing. But I'm just waiting for the day that I find, like, a pot of gold or something. Like,
really?
Nothing yet. Yeah, just a reward for it.
It's funny, on my narrowboat, I had something stop me when I was going through the Grand Union, the Leicester arm of the canal, and I had to turn off... Well, my engine stopped. Went and you have to put your hand in, don't you? And you're like, what am I going to find? It was an Iranian flag that was somehow got wrapped up. I was like, what's happening in Leicester?
You do find
it's
some
very
really
bizarre.
Odd things.
But most of the time, like you said, it's a single-use plastic bag.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the worst thing. I suppose at least you don't have the propeller issue. Which
I think
is one thing
as well that's quite funny with Plastic Patrol is people get quite competitive.
Oh, really?
Surprisingly
they
so.
They want to find more plastic.
Yeah, and there'll be a patch of plastic or in, like, you know, under the hedges or whatever that someone finds, and they're like, you know, nothing to see here, move along.
I want the and biggest... I suppose if
they
you
do,
have the biggest bag at the end,
yeah.
It's sad that there's that much there, but it's also you're proud that yeah. You've made this huge difference.
It is. People are sort of... They get very territorial, and it is very sort of like the reward of
this
massive pile.
Rubbish, I
found. Yeah.
That's brilliant, yeah. Though. I think... So, I mean, to round up, really, if anyone is kind of... You know, we've sort of convinced them they're sort of on the edge, yes, I'm going to give it a go. What's the final kind of words of inspiration you'd give them to say to give it a try?
I think it's one of those things that you just have to try it, yeah. And it's so much easier than it looks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everyone should come and do it. And also do your bit for Plastic Patrol as well for the environment. So
brilliant. And what a great way to end that. And it changed your life.
Yeah.
So you just never know. It could change your life.
That's a much better end. It did. And you're right. That's true.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Lizzie. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you.
Thank
and
you.
Myself thank and Lizzie you. Will be over at the Stanford's book signing stand just after this in a few minutes. So thank you all very much for taking the time
thank
to come
you.
And sit and listen to us have a chat. Thank you.